Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.
Right, let me see. Where am I? I'm at 34, nearly 35 minutes past the hour of 1 o'clock. And I want to take a look at hacking, as I mentioned earlier on, and security breaches, etc. Because security breaches are not a new phenomenon, but they have hit headlines more than we would like in the past couple of weeks. Well, the past bunch of weeks. Travel details of 9 million EasyJet passengers have been stolen. Personal details of Mariah Carey, Elton John, Lady Gaga and other A-list celebrities were leaked after an entertainment law firm was hacked. And even the security of video conferencing software like Zoom, that's been placed in doubt. So with the majority of people working from home these days, how secure is our data and what can we do to protect it? That's the question I'm asking. Jackie Fox, who leads the security practice at Accenture and is vice chairperson at Cyber Ireland, is on the line now to tell us about the world of hacking and what we can do and what we can sort of do to help prevent it, I suppose, is the way I should put it. Jackie, welcome to the programme. Thanks for being with us. Where will I start here? Yeah, the term hacking. Where did the term hacking originate?
So it's a good question, Dave. Well, people have been hacking for a very long time. And I think we used to have all these kind of tricksters and spoofers and people, and they had all sorts of different names. And the hacker, as we know it today, has probably originated from people who did what we called phone phreaking, where they used to hack into people's phone systems and make free phone calls for themselves. And that then turned into what we'd see today. And we have two different types of hackers. We have the ethical hacker and then the criminal hacker. The likes of me, I would like to think of myself as an ethical hacker, where we go testing people's systems to see whether or not a criminal hacker could get in and do something wrong. And then we have the black hat criminal hacker too.
So I presume if you want to rob a bank these days, you don't go in with a gun, you do it using kind of online means, let's say.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lot less risky to an individual really to commit crime online. And a lot of the crime that we see online is traditional crime that has just moved online, as opposed to things that are purely because it's in an online world that you can commit them.
By the way, you mentioned an ethical hacker and an unethical hacker. What's the difference between the two? Like, what are they?
Well, an ethical hacker is somebody who's paid by an organisation. Like, I have a team of ethical hackers who work with me.
Yeah.
And so we're paid by an organisation to try and break into them and to see what holes we can find that a black hat hacker could effectively find the same holes and get in and do damage. Whereas we're just trying to prove that we can get in and help people shore up the holes.
All right, so you do it first, so therefore they can fix it, yeah. Why do people
right.
do, I mean, I suppose money at the end of the day, but like, what are the motivations of your average hacker?
Well, there probably isn't such a thing as an average hacker, I'd say, and the motivations are very, very broad. Like money, I suppose, is probably what most of it boils down to at the end of the day, but we'd also see revenge hacks. We'd see people trying to steal intellectual property. Like, you know, there's a lot of people on guard at the moment in relation to kind of, you know, if you're developing a vaccine or working hard at the moment, you know, that people will be particularly careful about that intellectual property. People are trying to steal data, espionage, things like crypto mining, trying to use your system to mine cryptocurrency. So there's all sorts of reasons why people might hack into your systems.
And I presume, like, you know, the nation state hackers who target government agencies, this is a different ballgame altogether. Are you uncovering these people in your job?
We would see all sorts of hackers, right from the script kiddies, which are, you know, that traditional vision of someone sitting in a hoodie in their bedroom.
Yeah.
There's also the criminal hackers who are ultimately trying to make money or embarrass somebody potentially. And yes, nation state hackers as well. We would see that where, you know, they're in. They might only be testing systems or, you know, to use somewhere else or just kind of getting in to sit and wait in case they want to do something further down the line. Or they might actually be trying to steal something or cause some damage somewhere. Generally, they would have better tools at their disposal and they tend to be a lot quieter when they go into a system than like somebody who's just trying to steal something. Like they'll just go in, grab, bang and leave typically, whereas a nation state hacker would often go in very slowly and very quietly. And they could be months trying to get into your systems and they'd be very quiet when they'd be in there as well. So they're much harder to spot.
And learning how to hack. I mean, could I go to the how-to on the YouTube and just go, you know, how to hack?
You could. Now, one of the first things is that it is actually illegal to hack unless somebody has asked you to do that. So if you were to do such a thing, you would be doing a criminal act. Yes, you can learn to do it. And there's a lot of as well as tutorials, there's a lot of tools that are readily available to help people hack. So years ago, you know, you needed to be a really good coder to do something. But today, there are a lot of helpers and things that are there for people if they're doing it. Now, you know, the same tools are used by ethical hackers and black hat hackers because, you know, it's the same purpose. Like, you're not going to be a good ethical hacker if you don't know how to use the tools that a bad hacker is going to use.
But, like, no matter how much you can put in place to stop it or to certainly, you know, make it a lot harder than it was before you started looking at it, is it fair to say that if you go in through the dark web or something like that, that you could find some way, if you're really good at what you do as well, almost guaranteed to grant you access to just about anything?
It's kind of like a cat and mouse game. As an organization, you have to be secure 365 days of the year, 24/7. As a hacker, you just have to hit an organization once when their defenses are down in some way. So all the time, the type of vulnerabilities that are there in software, people are uncovering new ones all the time. So when you get one of these for the first time, we call them a zero day. And when nobody knows about something, it's very hard to protect against something that you don't know about. So you can just be purely unfortunate if you get hacked, or you could have bad security, one or the other. But if you're in the middle of what we call a patch cycle, where you're changing things and updating things to make them better because some new vulnerability has been discovered, you're being cautious and kind of taking your time on your systems, you can get caught in those windows as well.
Well, yeah. But I mean, if it's cat and mouse, then it's always to be one step ahead, I suppose. I mean, have there been turncoats, if I can call them that, who kind of start off entering into the world of hacking for the greater good, but then maybe turn to the dark side of unethical hacking once they see the possibility of money or just to cause anarchy or whatever?
Yeah, actually, we see people turning in both directions, which is quite interesting, because you'll get people who are on the good side and who get influenced to do something bad, or just their judgment is poor at times. And then also you'll get people who start off as bad hackers, like as black hat hackers, who might even end up doing jail time and kind of getting caught and being a criminal. But organizations will sometimes employ them because there's a perception that they're, you know, they're good at what they do. So if they can hack into other organizations, they're probably going to be good at defending your organization.
Yeah, and that's what you call them, Leonardo DiCaprio on Catch Me If You Can kind of idea, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's take the celebrity law firm that I mentioned earlier on, the States. It was hacked recently. Surely a huge law firm like that should have the appropriate cybersecurity, or is there no such thing as having impenetrable cybersecurity?
There is no such thing as having impenetrable cybersecurity. And as I said earlier, you can just be unfortunate or you can have poor security. And it is a race all the time. And we would typically advise people to put lots of layers in. Like, let's say, you know, if you had a castle, you're going to have like a moat and turrets and portcullis and guards walking around it. And you've got lots of different layers to try and catch people. If they get through one layer, you hope you're going to get them with boiling oil or something at another layer. So we would say take the same attitude to security and put lots of different things in place. Like, we call them firewalls, that they kind of protect around the perimeter, and you might have them inside as well. We'd say, you know, have good passwords, you know, use things like multi-factor authentication, where you might get a code on your phone to say, yes, I can go in, and put monitoring in place, so you're actually watching around the outside. So we would say have lots of layers in there, and hopefully one of those layers might stop people on the way in to do bad.
And then, of course, you'll be changing that in a few days' time. Like, basically, you update security all the time by changing stuff all the time too, changing passwords and everything else, so that, you know, whatever it looked like 2 weeks ago, it doesn't necessarily look like now. And that's one of the most important things, I suppose.
Yeah, that's part of it, very much so. And as I say, it's also very important to be watching what's going on and to know what normal looks like in your network and on your system, so that you know when something abnormal starts to happen.
Well, there's been a talk about the security of video call software, you know, like the Zoom stuff that everybody's doing and using and talking about now over the past 10 weeks or so. You know, it's the working at home thing. How safe is it to use Zoom and other apps like it?
Typically, video conferencing apps, you need to kind of take a view of what are you doing over it. Like, if you're chatting to your neighbours about the price of milk and, you know, who did what yesterday and what your kids are doing and things, and, you know, simple things, then I think it's, you know, fairly safe. If it's a conversation you'd be happy to have in public, I wouldn't be worrying too much about it. But now, if it's for work purposes or if you're having private discussions, then I would take a kind of a different view. Like, there were a lot of incidents reported of people having uninvited guests landing into their conferences and doing all sorts of things. And there's a lot of things that have been put in place for that, like having waiting rooms or having passwords getting in. But I think you need to take a view of what is it that you're trying to protect during that kind of video conferencing call. If you work for an organisation, I definitely wouldn't be using something they haven't approved. You just need to be careful. It's good if these kind of applications have what we'd call end-to-end encryption, which basically means from when it leaves you to when it arrives at the other end, it's scrambled and nobody can take a view on it. So there's lots you can do to protect yourself, but you know, you do need to take a view on what is it you're doing and what level of protection you need to put in place.
Well, then, if there's anything sensitive at all, I presume that everybody involved has to understand, if you like, the journey of the data between A and B, isn't that it?
Yeah, you know, that journey can often be completely different than you think it is. Like, you think you might be talking, like I'm talking to you at the moment, like from BlackRock to BlackRock or Donnybrook or wherever, and that probably isn't just taking that journey. It could be going all over the place. It could even be going outside of Ireland on its way back to you again. And so, you know, if you're doing really sensitive things or having very sensitive conversations, you actually need to understand what geographies your information is traveling over as well. And here's where we look at things what we call like geofencing. So to understand, for example, data protection in the EU, we would have a lot of things that would say, I don't want that data traveling outside the EU, because you can't guarantee what's going to happen in other different jurisdictions or kind of governmental regimes, what they might view on your privacy. So it's important to know, as well as the journey and how many people are in that journey, where it's going and what it might be exposed to along that journey too.
Right. By the way, we're talking to Jackie Fox, the security who leads the security practice at Accenture and is vice chairperson at Cyber Ireland. So just one or two last ones, Jackie. The social media sites, let's go to that now. They have a lot of data on us. So how well protected is that?
Well, I suppose if you put something out in social media, you are pretty much publishing it in a lot of forms, some of them. Others, you're relying on communications between one person and another. And typically, most social media sites would have a lot of protections in place. Although, as we discussed earlier, nothing is bulletproof. You know, things can happen, something can go wrong, a new vulnerability can be discovered that just exposes everything. So I think you need to take a view on anything that you put on social media about how you would feel if it ended up being published. And then taking the view of, well, if it did get published, how would I feel about it? And therefore, I'm going to think about which social media channels I'm going to put information out onto. Like, there are people who will maliciously do things, and things can happen accidentally as well. And even if you have a conversation with one person on social media, there's a possibility they could screenshot that or they could pass it on to somebody else. And I think you need to bear that in mind, you know, and take a view of there's far more proof behind something that you've put into writing than there is between a one-to-one conversation that you've had with somebody face-to-face. So I think people need to be aware of the risks and act accordingly, depending on the risks of the type of channels that they're using.
And from your point of view, it's not asking too much to do. Listen, go on. If you are worried, you know, Google search geo ring fencing, whatever you call it, and end-to-end encryption and all that and other key phrases. You'll find out in general what might be, what might not be. Listen, on a small scale level, for everyday users of the internet, finally then, like me, what can we do to help prevent security breaches?
One of the most important things is never to share passwords across different sites and different things that you're using, or never even kind of share a rhythm. You know, like a lot of people might set a password up something like, you know, I don't know, wardrobe one, and then their next password will be wardrobe two, you know, so not to have patterns like that in your passwords that are easy to guess. And also, where you can, to have multi-factor authentication in place, where, you know, you're using something else other than just a password to get into something and protect it. Having that layered security that I spoke about, and just general good cyber hygiene. Like, I think one of the most important things that we need to do is think about the devices we're using, make sure we keep them up to date, make sure they're patched. if you've got Wi-Fi in your home environment, make sure there's a password on it, that it's not open for somebody walking past the house to get onto your Wi-Fi and start looking in and seeing what data is flying around in it. And, you know, so it's a lot of it are fairly simple things. So having good cyber hygiene in place is very, very important.
So just like Zoom is one thing, work call. Would you maybe, if anybody was worried, say, you know, use Microsoft Teams instead?
I think in a work environment, let's say in my work environment in Accenture, we use Microsoft Teams, and we would recommend that all our calls internally are made across that. We've obviously done kind of an evaluation. We feel it's an appropriate business product to be using. And I think each organization needs to look at their own kind of security and take a view as to where they're prepared to have risks and where they're not. And like we've done that, and I would recommend every organization to do that.
All right, well, listen, Jackie, thanks a million for talking to us on the programme today. Jackie Fox, who leads the security practice at Accenture and is vice chairperson at Cyber Ireland. Thanks, Jackie. Good luck. Take it easy.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.